Cause that's the way boys are. That's the way boys are.
Susan Jacoby's new ebook is Last Men on Top. The author of the best-selling The Age of American Unreason tackles the question of whether men and women have it all or can have it all with a look back at the last pre-feminist generation of men who supposedly had it all and asks, what exactly did they have? Again, the new book is The Last Men on Top. It is a great pleasure to welcome Susan Jacoby to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
What brought you to this particular topic of looking at what men had back then?
We're talking basically about the generation that came of age during World War II, and in that I also include the Depression-born sons who came of age in the early 50s. I think a couple of things made me take time out from my usual writing about atheism and religion to do this. One, I'm getting older myself. I'm in my 60s, and you tend to look back on your own upbringing more, I think, as you get older. But also, definitely the series Mad Men, which I've looked at with all of the interest and enjoyment that an amazing number of people of various ages have, and yet I don't think it at all presents a portrait of what life was really like for most men of my father's generation. You know, in Mad Men, what you're getting is a portrait of the 1% of its day, people who made a lot of money in advertising on Madison Avenue, so they had the money to rent hotel rooms for trysts with their mistresses and apartments for their permanent mistresses. I mean, my father, first of all, he worked so hard. He was an accountant. I grew up in Michigan. He worked so hard, he wouldn't have had any time to devote that much time to adultery, even if he'd had the inclination. And secondly, my supposedly powerless mother would have discovered any unexplained expenditures of over $25, which even then was not enough to rent a decent hotel room in Lansing, Michigan. So I think, in a way, we're getting an almost both demonized and glamorized portrait of what the lives of these men were like.
Why do you think that is the case, that it's one or the other, that instead, as you write in the book, that there were these hidden economic and psychological costs that made that view one or the other quite a fantasy?
Well, I think you see, look, the basic covenant of my parents' generation, it was the pre-feminist covenant was this. The man had the total responsibility for making the living in the world outside. The woman had total responsibility in the domestic sphere. And the price to women has been pretty well told by feminism. It was the suppression of worldly ambition. The price to men has not been as well told, and it was simply that everything depended on them. They had no fallback position. And, I mean, today, I think one of the reasons there is interest on the part of people in their 20s and 30s in this generation today, you know, most people aren't that all interested in people who are old enough to be their grandparents and most of whom are dead. But I think one of the reasons there's a renewed interest today is that there is a renewed debate about the proper roles of men and women. There are different kinds of stresses on couples today, as it's very difficult to get along without two incomes, unless, again, you're extremely rich. And there's a tendency, a kind of nostalgia for the days when you were able to support a family on one income. But that really begs the question of what happened if you lost that one income and there was no fallback position at all? How many more houses, homes would have been lost in the recession of the last since 2008 if women didn't work at all outside their homes, as they didn't in my mother's generation, middle-class women? I think it's something also important, which is in my ebook, which and it relates to the Mad Men thing, is we also tend to think about the most well-off people. It wasn't true that all women didn't work back in the 1950s. What is true is that middle-class women didn't work. Poor women, women in the lowest fifth of American families, worked pretty much to the extent that they do today. So poor women have always worked. We're talking about people who were middle class or who aspired to that.
So how much of this is a class issue?
Well, there is a class issue. There is a class issue in that a lot of the privileges of men were privileges of middle to upper middle class men. And I'm not saying for a minute. I started my career as a reporter at the Washington Post in 1965. And certainly as a young woman and a young reporter, I had plenty of experiences with the way that male privilege could work against ambitious women, just as you can see that in Mad Men too. But my point is that not all men had this kind of power. Most men didn't. I said in a piece I wrote for the New York Times a few weeks ago that one of the strongest memories of my childhood is the sound of tires. It's an unmistakable sound if you grew up in a place like Michigan, and you're in New England, so you must know this sound too, of tires rolling over rock salt in the middle of the winter.
Right.
In January, February, and March, my dad, who was an accountant, it was tax season, he went to work at 4:30 in the morning. He worked 80-hour weeks to keep our family going. This is not a life of privilege. Yes, I suppose you could say maybe he had more privilege than the secretaries in his office, but he had the privilege of working an 80-hour week.
I want to key in on three words that you just said, which is keep our family going. When we talk about this notion of having it all, do men or women, do we really want to have it all, or do we just want to do that, to keep our family going?
Well, keep our family going. I mean, that's what everyone wants. I mean, the notion that anybody could have it all, that is really a post-1970s expression. It's something that, because there was this covenant in which men and women had more strongly defined roles, nobody thought of having it all. And in fact, that's one of the things, it's one of the reasons I think more kindly of the men of my father's generation than maybe I did when I was young. My dad died in 1986 of lung cancer, and it's a cliche, but it's true, that nobody ever said on their deathbed, "I wish I'd worked more." My father told me so many times that his greatest regret was that he hadn't spent more time with my brother and me when we were growing up. And this, again, this was a big price for men, one which both men and women are paying today. But the price of men who worked 80 hours a week was that they didn't get to spend nearly as much time as certainly my own father wanted to with the families that they were working so hard to support.
So where should we be now, in the sense of we look at this time, this Mad Men time, with a degree of nostalgia and a degree of disgust?
Yeah,
and
both.
and now we think of, okay, well, where are we?
Well, look, I mean, first of all, I think that in spite of the problems that arise when both people are working, and I would be the last person to minimize them or to say where, quote, we should be. But one of my aims in writing this ebook, I'm hoping for a younger readership for this reason. There are things to appreciate about the present time, and a real look back at the past helps you appreciate them. And one of them is, in fact, that whatever inequities there are today, men and women still, they share more of the responsibility. I think that men and women understand each other's lives better. And furthermore, when I think my mother went back to work when my brother and I were old enough to be out of the house, when we were both actually in college, my mother was a very competent woman who would have been happier working, as she told me before her death. It's not surprising I wrote this book now. Both of my parents are dead now, and I can say what I want.
Mm.
But the fact is people today, because it is stressful when both people are working too, So there's a tendency to think that maybe there was another way to do it better if only one person could just support the family. What I'm trying to say is every generation has to work it out for itself. But there are a lot of good things about the fact of the two-income family today. And one of them is simply that either person has help in a fallback position if the other person loses their job. You know, I repeat, what would have happened to families in the recession? I know what would have happened. There was one recession in my childhood, and it wasn't nearly as bad as the one we're all still living through. It was in 1958. It lasted 6 months. And growing up in Michigan, everything was connected to the auto industry. Half of my dad's clients were in some way connected to the auto industry. If that recession had gone on as long as this one had, I have no doubt my father's business would have gone bankrupt. And there would have been nothing, even a smaller income, to fall back on, because my mother hadn't worked outside her home since 1945. And, you know, all she would have been hired for then was as a file clerk. So that there is a lot to appreciate about the greater responsibility sharing that there is today.
Well, let's talk about just that, about appreciation. In the end, as we wrap up, when you take aside the our roles as men and women and our careers and our jobs and the necessity to make a living, to provide the lives that we have, where should happiness and fulfillment come into that equation?
Happiness and fulfillment. Well, first of all, I'm a writer, and I know what a privilege it is. The fact is that there's some weeks like this which are bad, but most of my life I've worked and made a living at something I really love doing. And in fact, I also mention this in the book. My dad wrote me a letter when I was 25 years old in Moscow. I was married to the Moscow correspondent of the Washington Post, and I wrote my first book in Moscow. And he said, "I envy you because you love what you do." And we can't all expect to love what we do. I think what my dad was saying to me is really most of my life. And in fact, then he later told me after I got back that what he really wanted to be was a high school history teacher. But by the time after the war, he had a one-year-old baby and it was too late. He had to do the thing he'd done before. Well, maybe if my mother had worked and it had been okay for her to work as she would have liked to have done, maybe my dad could have gone back to school on the GI Bill and become a high school history teacher. But I think happiness, I don't know. I know it's something you can't pursue. It's a byproduct of doing the things that you like to do. And I think, you know, for most people, happiness, I'm afraid, I hate to mention Dr. Freud, but it's in both love and work. And for most people, I think happiness is in their relationships with other people. And some of those relationships arise out of work, and some of them arise out of love. But certainly if a life is totally unbalanced in favor of one or the other, it doesn't make most people happy. I can't tell you what makes any individual happy. But I think one thing that we all need to do is appreciate the time that we're in and not be thinking of something that might be better, of a time when supposedly men had it all, but women were protected. Women weren't protected, and men didn't have it all any more than anybody has it today. And maybe it's the having it all thing that is the really wrong thing. And I don't agree with the idea that women ought to quit work because you can't have it all. I think sometimes people have to settle for having as much of what they would really like and what's really important to them as they can get. It doesn't, you know, even the words having it all are not good. You know, perhaps doing what you love with people and with work as much as you can is as close as you can get, and you don't have to have it all. The best most of us can have is to have it some.
Absolutely. The new ebook is The Last Men on Top. It is from Random House. Susan Jacoby, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, the new ebook is The Last Men on Top. It is from Random House. I want it all. Hey, yeah. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.